1 Timothy chapter 6 on the subject of materialism. We begin in verse 3. If anyone advocates a different doctrine and does not agree with sound words, those of our Lord Jesus Christ, and with the doctrine conforming to godliness, he is conceited and understands nothing. Paul is attacking again the false teachers in Ephesus. And they're wrangling with words. They're getting into disputes. He goes on, he says, they have a morbid interest in controversial questions and disputes about words, out of which arise envy, strife, abusive language, evil suspicions, and constant friction between men of depraved mind and deprived of the truth. Remember, in the opening, Paul laid out his thesis for those who are godly, which is that the goal of our instruction is love. Verse 5, what is the goal of their instruction? Envy, strife, abusive language, suspicion, constant friction. I've been in groups like this before, where you're constantly having to second guess what you're going to say because you're worried about how people are going to interpret it, and there's so much vying for people's opinion, authority, envy, so much fighting. And as the Proverbs say, when the scoffer leaves, the fighting goes with him. And so it is. Paul is saying that we need to do some fighting. We shouldn't be afraid to fight. Verbally, of course. But eventually the goal is to get rid of this and to have a harmonious, peaceful place where we can serve God together. Yeah, sometimes it takes a little bit of fighting to get there, but to get on the same page, that's the goal. Love. Well, speaking of these men, he says they suppose that godliness is a means of gain. Indeed, godliness actually is a great gain when accompanied by contentment. See, these false teachers were out to get what they could for themselves. Paul says, actually, to live for Jesus Christ, you gain quite a bit. There was a pastor years ago who was a medical doctor. He gave up his career. He took a 90% pay cut. Sir Martin Lloyd-Jones. Or rather, Dr. Martin Lloyd-Jones. At the end of his life, they asked him, so how did you feel to give up 90% of your salary for your life? And he says, I gave up nothing. So true. We keep saying, oh God, I've given so much to you. I've given so much to you. God's like, I'm not taking anything that's worth anything. I don't need anything from you. To be content with what we already have, wouldn't that be nice? For, he says, we've brought nothing into the world, so we can take nothing out of it either. Good point. If we have food and covering, with these we shall be content. This could be metonymy. He's speaking metonymically. You might be saying, what does that mean? Well, you know what it means. If the captain of the ship says, all hands on deck, are we to believe that he's just saying 10 fingers and palms should be on the deck? No, he's saying all hands on deck means, you know, all boots on the ground, just the boots. He's speaking of everything in between, food and covering. This would include the basics of life. Let's be reasonable here. That's what he's saying. But let's not twist this to believe that Paul is saying that we can just keep adding and adding and adding and adding until basically we are at the status quo of our materialistic culture. He's saying that the necessities, your need, that's what we should be content with. And he says, but those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare in many foolish and harmful desires, which plunge men into ruin and destruction. How many different ways could he say it here? I mean, for one, he's saying materialism is deceiving. It is a temptation, a snare. Picture a fish looking at a lure. It's a snare. It's not food. The fish believes that it's food. And then all of a sudden, it becomes food because the fisherman, you know, jerks its cheek and pulls him up and flays him right open. It's a snare. That's the language being, that is provocative language. Temptation, a snare, many foolish and harmful desires. Yeah, if this wasn't so difficult for us, then he wouldn't have to use all these different terms. Like, you don't look at a beware sign if it's something like, you know, fluffy bunnies in somebody's yard. It only says beware of dog if that dog has some teeth. And it's because you're not expecting a dog. You know what I'm saying? So here we're seeing temptation, snare, and being foolish because it's deceiving. You can slip right into this. And he says too, it's painful. So you're not going to see it coming. You're going to tacitly slip into materialism. And then when you do, harmful desires, ruin, and destruction. Ooh, this is serious. Whatever it is we're looking at here, very serious. Materialism, the inordinate value on money, possessions, and status. For example, the attorney that I knew, he went to his boss. He was trying to make partner. He spoke to his boss and he said, you know, I feel like the demands here at this firm, they're pretty serious. You know, 80 hours a week, 90 hours a week. And the boss said, you know, I've been meaning to talk to you about that. I feel like your priorities are out of order. And my friend, the lawyer, he said, yeah, I think they are. He says, you know, in my life, you know, God comes first and my family comes second and my friendships come third. And I got to say, you know, work fourth or fifth. To which the partner of the firm replied, well, so-and-so, we want to be number two on that list. And maybe even number one. Well, he quit that firm. And you know what happened? He went destitute. His kids were starving. It was awful. They're on the street. I'm just kidding. That never happened. He was a lawyer, for God's sakes. His kids weren't missing any meals, that's for sure. No regrets on that. He found another firm that was reasonable and never went through any of this. Felt pretty happy with his life. He says, the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. A longing of the heart. This begins in the heart. To look at a person and say, oh yeah, she's a materialist, can't you tell? He's a materialist, can't you tell? There could be some signs, yes, I think we could discern this. The question isn't for them. The question here tonight is for you. As you look within your own heart, is there a longing for status, for significance, for money, for success? Is this in your heart? Do you long for this? Do you daydream? Do you sit there daily, you know, wondering about the next vacation that you're going to take, the next thing that you're going to buy, the different things that you could purchase, comparing the deals, you know, oh yeah, Tahiti, oh, that's pretty good. Constantly comparing, why does she get to go there? Why do not, oh man, that's a nice no filter, really? I mean, constantly upward mobility, comparing to other people. It's a longing of the heart, and the longing begins first. And then you begin to wander away. I love that. I mean, I don't love it, but I love the picture because it captures it so vividly. It isn't that somebody wakes up one day and says, I want to fall into ruin and destruction with my life. But they just sort of, you know, and they start to follow something. And then all of a sudden this opportunity opens up over here. Oh, that seems good. And then all of a sudden they make a purchase over here. I can't really afford that. I kind of can. I don't know. Yeah, not a big deal. And then all of a sudden they're going 180 degrees the different direction. They've wandered away and they wake up one day and they're like, why is my heart so cold toward God? Why is that the case? Let's think about that. I've been feeling apathetic and sort of depressed lately. Why might that be? Answer very well could be materialism. Jesus said, Matthew chapter 6, verse 21, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Notice what Jesus is saying here. Where you put your treasure, your heart will follow your treasure. So it doesn't just show where your heart is. Actually, it determines where your heart goes. So if I put my money into my car, my heart gets wrapped up with my car. If I put my money into the work of God. All of a sudden, I start to feel excited about that work. He said in Acts chapter 20, verse 35, it is more blessed. Remember, we talked about this word, makarios, happier, privileged. You're happier if you give than if you receive. Why am I feeling mildly depressed, that low status of depressed? It could be because your treasure is not in the things of God, that you're not giving, that you're taking, you're hoarding. Honestly, I feel unsuccessful and disappointed with my life. I've talked to some people about this, even people that have been following Christ for years. And in a moment of honesty, they say, you know, I feel like a disappointment. Whatever it was for you, that comment at, you know, the holidays from a loved one, that reunion, high school reunion, being on social media, comparing yourself to other people. And all of a sudden, you kind of feel like a failure. You feel disappointed. I feel like my life should be somewhere that it isn't. I'm not successful. Here's the question that Jesus would have each one of us answer. Define success. What is a successful life? See, in our culture, we use the word success to be equivalent to wealthy. And if that's your definition, you might be a failure. But if your definition is Jesus' definition, you could be a success in life, meanwhile feeling like a complete loser. Jesus said in Luke chapter 12, verse 15, life is not measured by how many toys you have, by how big your garage is, by how many degrees you have after your name, by how big the square footage of your house is, by how successful you are, by the zeros after the commas in your bank account. It's not, that's not the measuring rod. Like if we were bowling and the goal is 300, that's how you measure if you're doing well. And the measurement isn't money. The measurement is people. That's not the measurement. He says in verse 21, a person is a fool. There's the loser, according to Jesus. The person is a fool to store up earthly wealth. Meanwhile, they don't have a rich relationship with God. So true. That's got to be true. If you store up money, but you forfeit God in the process, you haven't lost a little thing. You've lost everything. You've lost it all. To give up the greatest conceivable good for what? Money? The opinion of other people? That matters to you? Meanwhile, you've forfeited a relationship with God. Bad idea. I can handle living for success and affluence for a little while. This comes up. People say, you know, I'm just going to kind of do this for a little bit, and then I'm going to get back out of it, and then I'll get into following Christ. Two words. Good luck. Jesus was the one who said, no one can serve two masters. For you cannot serve both God and money. You'll either love the one and hate the other, or hate the one and love the other. You can't love God and wealth. You can't. If you think you can, then Jesus is wrong. I wouldn't want to be in that position if I was you. I'm just going to go for this for a little while. The problem is you wander into it. The longing leads to leaving, and then leaving leads to a very coldness of heart. And all of a sudden, you're in a place you never thought you would be. Things are falling apart. You can't even figure out why. Well, he says, but you, Timothy, flee from these things, you man of God. I like how people say, oh yeah, the Bible only says to flee from sexual immorality. No, flee from materialism and idolatry. That'd be a false religion. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Flee. You know what the word flee means? Run. Get away from that. It's so dangerous. Like to think if you had a really young, hot person of the opposite sex laying on your bed, you shouldn't go in there and be like, I think I can hold off on this. You run. That's what you do. You run. You run next time that, I don't know if that's ever happened to you, but never happened to me, by the way, but, you run, you get out of it. You don't say, I wonder if I could really willpower my way through this. No. Flee from these things, you man of God, and replace it with what? Righteousness, godliness, faith, love, perseverance, and gentleness. Instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, which they may take hold of, which is life indeed. Let's think about this subject of materialism. There's hidden costs if you get into materialism. Like if you get into buying something, like I don't know if you've ever been where I was at, where you're watching that thing at 1 a.m. and there's like a blender and it like can juicify everything and it seems really good and they got this powder that goes with it and you're like, this sounds really good. And the guy on there is just like so orange. He looks like he survived, you know, a nuclear holocaust or something, and he's selling you this thing, and you're like, this looks so good. And at first, you're like, that's really stupid. And then later, you're like, I could see how someone would buy it. And then later, you're like, I need that now, right? And you see all the benefits. And then you read the fine print, and you're like, or you read the reviews. There's hidden costs. Everything that we get into, there's hidden costs. What's the catch? Oh, many, many hidden costs. For materialism. I'm not going to stand here and tell you that if you go for materialism, you're just going to be walking around moping and depressed for the rest of your life as though money doesn't have anything to give you. I would be lying if I told you that. The Bible doesn't teach that. Of course money gives you something. Why would anyone go for it if it didn't give you anything? That's stupid. It does give you something. The point is there's hidden costs, which if we include and you put these on the ledger, the case is so clear. This is not something we should go for. Now, to be clear, this is the world in which we live. This is the air that we breathe, and we are suffocating in a materialistic culture. It didn't always used to be this way. Starting in 1967, sociologists studied freshmen in college, and they asked the question, you know, what do you value? And this statement came up. Developing a meaningful philosophy of life. And 86% said, yeah, I agree with that. What about this statement? Oh, excuse me. Today, 40 years later, 86% was cut in half to 42%. Wow. Having a worldview, a way through which you can view the world, they don't think this is important anymore. I sure do. I mean, even when things are going bad, you don't have anything transcendent on which you can hang on. I think that's pretty important. Meanwhile, 45% said that they thought being well off financially was very important in the 60s. And you say, yeah, it's the 60s. I mean, you know, flower power and hippies and everything. Okay, but today it just keeps climbing. And why would the worldview part go down? Why wouldn't that stay the exact same place? It's clear. In our culture, we value money. We don't value thoughtful reflection. We don't value relationships. We will pick up and leave. We will leave our spouse, leave our kids if we're not happy. We'll go to the other side of the country. Why? Because there's money there. That's why. And this is just normal. I guess that's my point. It's normal in our culture. The question is it good? Is it healthy? How about this? The average size of the house in 1950 was 1,100 square feet. Today, the average size of a house is 2,300 square feet. But it gets worse. In 1950, they had more kids. So there was 3.6, I don't really know how that works out, by the way. 3.67 kids, or excuse me, members per household. Today, there's 2.63 people per household. So we have more than twice the square footage with a less person in each house. That's 3 to 3.5 times the square footage per person. Don't even get me started on my research on garages. 2, 3, 4 car garages, and they can't fit any cars in them because of all their junk. They got all this junk in there that they're going to use someday. Makes me want to puke. What about depression? They compared gratitude in this study from 2010, gratitude versus materialism. Depression went down for the gratitude group. Those who, and they have the measures and everything, read the study. They got the measures to show a person who values gratitude and a person who's materialistic. And this seems to be like one of those things that you can't be both in a state of gratitude and materialism at the same time. I'm not going to say it's impossible, but it's like I love you and hate you at the same time. There's just certain emotions that you can't hold in your heart at the same time. And the people that had a life oriented around gratefulness, their depression lowered. People with materialism, depression increased. What about grade point average? Yeah, the gratitude group, higher grades. The materialism group, the people that are trying to get ahead, to get the grades, to get the score, they actually are doing worse. More on that in a little bit. Social integration, having friends, having a good social network. We're not talking about social media. We're talking about real people that you can see and hang out with. How'd they do? The gratitude group? Way ahead of the materialism group. That whole idea that the, you know, the rich and pretty and handsome kids, oh yeah, those are the ones that are so popular. They are some of the loneliest people you'll ever meet. I know, because I've met a lot of them. And they said that was one of the loneliest times of my entire life. Meanwhile, people that are grateful, they are magnetic people. People want to be around people that are grateful. They don't have envy. They don't have comparison, competition. Good people. What about emotional health? This study here by Helga Dittmar was what's called a meta-analysis. So she's looking at 175 other studies, and she's analyzing all of those studies and putting them together. What data did she come up with here? All negative. That was the surprising thing about this study. She says, on average, if you put everything together, it was negative 0.15 altogether, wrapping all the data together. So it's negative to get into materialism, period, end of story. But then if you break this out, down 0.28 for self-image, down for subjective well-being, just how you feel about yourself any given day, down for depression, down for anxiety, bad, bad, bad. And I listened to her lecture on this to make sure I was reading this article correctly and faithfully. And she said, you're reading it right because all of the numbers are to the left, negative. And she looked at 12 specific areas, all of which were negative. Ouch. What about depression and anxiety? This is so shocking, you might not even believe it. This comes from Dr. Sunia Luthar. She's from the University of Arizona. She's a specialist in this area. She compared high-achieving schools. These are schools where, on average, the kids get 1,200 to 1,400 on their SATs, and looked at those schools. Didn't matter where. They could be from the Northeast, Southeast, Middle America, Northwest, Southwest, didn't matter. And she looked at all of them, religious schools, public schools, private schools, didn't matter. That wasn't an issue. What she found with the high-achieving schools compared to the national norms is that the boys were 5 to 10 times more clinically significantly depressed. She's clear on this. Not just that they feel sad sometimes. We all feel that way. But markers that would show up on the DSM to show this is a clinical issue. Girls, somewhere between 4 to 14 times the anxiety and the depression of the national norms. It's hard enough to be a teenager in America. If you want to get even worse, get into materialism. The most recent study I read, this is for Public Policy, 2018, they listed 4 of the worst environmental factors that could come up in a kid's life in adolescence. Things like poverty, trauma, discrimination. Number 4 was an environment where you were forced to excel. I know many of us are like the rich kids, you know, always complaining, always belly aching and stuff. I didn't come from a family like that, by the way. I didn't come from a rich, you know, well-to-do, whatever. First guy in my family to graduate from college, right? So we didn't have a lot of money, but we were happy. And I don't hold any hatred in my heart or any self-righteousness in my heart toward the rich. Jesus, when he talked to the rich young ruler, it says in Mark chapter 10, he looked at him and he loved him. And he said, sell all that you have and give to the poor. As we speak about this, I hope it is with love in our hearts that we see this as a real issue. These are people's lives. Friendships, romance, Tim Kasser. Oh, man, you read the literature on this. Tim Kasser of Knox College. He's retired now, but he is the godfather of research on materialism. You should read his literature on this. He says, people who prioritize materialistic values and goals have lower quality romantic and friend relationships. No kidding. I'm so used to treating everything like an object, something with a price tag over its head, and then I'm trying to get into friendships. I'm starting to treat people like things and things like people. And no wonder, the envy, the backbiting, we don't know how to relate when we're into this mindset. What about marriage? Marriage duration is inversely associated with spending on the engagement ring and the wedding ceremony. Do you see what that's saying? Bigger the ring, bigger the rock, bigger the wedding. Oh, I just want it to be such a special day. I want it to be so amazing and stuff. I just wanted that perfect little ring for myself. Okay, and this is the guys and the girls too. I'm not picking on the girls at all. It's the guys' insecurities as well. Well, I don't want to look like some kind of a chump change, you know, showing up, giving my... Listen, you want to have a successful marriage? Focus on the marriage. Don't focus on the wedding. Everyone is so myopic looking at the wedding day. I wanted it to be so perfect, like in my dreams. Focus on your 60 years together as a couple. Oh, boy, I better settle down here. Okay. Negative association with marital quality, even when spouses were unified on their materialistic values. Yeah, that study from 2011. Even when the couple is like, we both agree to materialism. We love it. Worse marital quality. What does that tell you? It tells you there's something deleterious, something damaging about this value. This ruins lives. So what do we do? If you're in this situation and you can sense that you've been slipping in your heart, I know many of us wouldn't just stand up and say, man, I've been being a materialist lately. That's the thing. Jesus says, beware. Luke chapter 12, verse 15. Paul here says that it's tempting. It's a snare. The whole point is nobody thinks they're a materialist. Nobody. George Verwer, big guy on the global poverty scale, he was meeting with these pastors over in a third world country. He spoke to them at this conference of maybe a conference, you know, 30 different pastors. And he said, you know, you guys have any questions? Well, the pastor said, is it true you're from America? Yes, it's true. He said, well, is it true that over in America that they all have two cars per household? And Verwer said, yeah, it's true. And they got these big mansions too. We've seen the pictures. Yeah, they do have big houses, man, big. Air conditioning, yeah. Heat, yes. TVs, more TVs than people in America. He said, this is the oddest thing. Each and every one of them in America thinks that they're just barely scraping by. Nobody thinks they're a materialist. We're constantly having upward mobility, looking at others, comparing ourselves to them. We need to get underneath the Word of God that can train our hearts on this. If you can sense God speaking to you, I hope you can. Receive His love, His security, His goodness, His grace into your life. That's where you need to start. Right there. Saying to God, okay, I'm scared. I'm worried about my future. I'm worried about my student loans. I'm worried about my debt. I get it. I'm in the same world that you live in, right? But to start here, as Paul puts it in verse 17, command those who are rich. That's everyone in this room. If you had three meals per day today and this week, if you've got a clothes on your back, if you've got a wardrobe, somewhere to live, that's you. You're rich, according to this standard. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in their wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Start right here. If you've never started a relationship with Christ, no wonder you're scared to death over your wealth, because that's all you have. If your identity is wrapped up in your success, if your identity is wrapped up in your wealth, if your identity is wrapped up in the degrees that you have or whatever else, and those things go away, then you go away. If those things crumble, then you crumble. No wonder your identity is so fragile. Come to know Jesus Christ. Start right there with the security, the love, what he gives to you. Second, develop some critical thinking. Start to think about what you're like. How about this? The guy I talked to, and he said, I think I'm going to buy this, you know, big purchase and stuff. And I was like, really? He said, yeah, because I can afford it. See, to me, I don't even think that should be on the table. I think it could work negatively. Like, if you couldn't afford it, you definitely should not be buying that, right? United States, $6,000 in credit card debt per person, more than any other country in the world. Unbelievable debt. We just keep swiping. We can't stop. Here, we want to develop some critical thinking. Some of these aphorisms that are just so common. Well, I can afford it. You know, I think I deserve it and stuff like that. Speaking to kids. If you end up becoming a parent and you're speaking to your kids, having a running critique, you know, watching commercials, watching TV, you know, everything that you're seeing on the television screen right there, that's not true. They're trying to trick you. We've got this thing with my kids where we got them to the point where, you know, they're watching these things, commercials is what they're called. And my son turns to me and he's like, they're just trying to trick me. And I'm just like, I love you. It's so true. It's convicting too, because it's like they're trying to trick me as well. Gratitude. Yeah. Paul says in verse 6, godliness with contentment is great gain. Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be so nice if you just woke up in the morning and you looked at yourself in the mirror and you were just happy with what you saw? Wouldn't that just be the best? You looked around at your stuff and you're just like, this is a great life I live. God, this is amazing to have a life like this. You know, for me, here's my car. Now, it has one out of the four hubcaps still remaining. It's a wounded soldier, but it's still fighting. It's got three of the handles broken. I had two of them fixed. I'm either really strong or I keep ripping them off because it's in the middle of the winter. But it hasn't been cold at all recently, so I don't know why that would be the case. It goes 0 to 60. It's got heat in there. It's got air conditioning. I got this little thing I paid $20. It has a little Bluetooth. You heard of that? Goes from your phone to the thing. I got all my music on there, books on tape and stuff. It's amazing. Great car. We installed a pool this last summer. There's our pool. And a little video here too. Yeah. They're not deprived. They're happy. They don't need some big, but they're so happy splashing in the water and to have time with mom and dad and stuff. It's great. It's a great life. Wonderful life. Now, you might not look at my stuff and say, oh, that's all that great. It is to me. I get in that car every time I say, thank you, God, it started again. It doesn't always do that. Gratitude. Thinking about your death. Paul says in 1 Timothy 6:7, we brought nothing into the world. That's true. None of us were showing up with any of these electronic devices and all this junk and houses and everything. We came out buck naked. That's exactly how we're going to leave. And so the idea that we're going to somehow defeat this, think about that for a second. They've said if people think about their death a little bit, like what their death is going to be, it makes them more materialistic. Because the fear of death holds them captive, and then they just want to be distracted by buying things. But people who think about their death and what it will look like and how they want to end their lives and what kind of a legacy they want to leave behind, those are the people who say, I want to give away. What am I holding on to this crap for? This money. I don't need any of this. There's so much I could give away. So much. And finally, become a giver. Become a financial giver. To this church, yes, there's biblical imperatives for this. 1 Corinthians 9, 1 Timothy 5, Galatians chapter 6, that if you're in a church, now if you're new here and you don't consider this to be your church, we don't want your money, all right? Keep it. Keep it to yourself. Go out and get a beer tonight. Do whatever you want to do, all right? We're talking about people that consider this their church. Become a giver, a financial giver. Then there's giving to the poor. There's giving to missions. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, so I don't want to labor the point. My point is simply this. When we give of our time, when we give of our effort, when we give of ourselves, when we give of our money, this is a very happy life. It's a very safe life to be secure. Paul says in verse 11, remember, flee from all this and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, and love. Be generous. Be willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. I look back on all of the money that I've given over the years, and I start to tally that up, and I realize, you know, little by little, month by month, it doesn't seem like a lot, but then you start to tally it up. And you start to realize what a lump sum that is. You know, that could have paid off our student loans. We've got 90K in student loans. Almost as much as our house mortgage. And we got, we got a couple kids. We're trying to think about how to pay for their, you know, school someday. And, I'll tell you what. I look at that money I gave. I don't have any regrets whatsoever. And I wish I could have given more. We will not regret this.